Cebu Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the We Real Cool film series at the Clinton Street Theater. The film this month is A Streetcar Named Desire, showing Thursday, February 18th at 7 p.m. Winner of 5 Academy Awards and considered the first dramatic jazz score of a film, 1951's A Streetcar Named Desire remains a landmark which forced the medium into a new, raw, emotional, mature kind of expression. Again, that's A Streetcar Named Desire, Thursday, February 18th, 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Cebu Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the Pan-African film series hosted by the All-African People's Revolutionary Party. The film this month is The Fall of Libya, showing Wednesday, February 24th at 6 p.m. at the Portland State University Smith Memorial Student Union in Room 329. The Fall of Libya is a short documentary of the role of imperialism played violently and illegally overthrowing the democratically elected Libyan government in 2011. Again, that's The Fall of Libya, Wednesday, February 24th at 6 p.m. at the Smith Memorial Student Union in Room 329 at Portland State University, 1825 Southwest Broadway in Portland. Again, that is 1825 Southwest Broadway in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
I'm Dr. Demento, this is KBOO Portland, and you are now in the control of the Union of Time Thieves.
Where do I go? Follow the river. Where do I go? Follow the gulls. Where is the something? Where is the someone that tells me why I live and die?
Hi, I'm Becky, and I'm your host for today's program. I'm a member of the Union of Time Thieves, which was created to reclaim the world we all live in from the powers of alienation. Using the writings and tools developed by the Situationist International, we hope to break free of the spectacle and to inspire others to join our cause, the revolutionary jamming of culture.
smoking up some serious NYCQ. And doing the dance with the duck.
You are the debutante of Delicious Duck.
That's exactly what I expected next.
The economy is going through tough times. Many hardworking Americans blame wealthy CEOs out of touch with what's going on in their own companies. Americans are worried about the economy. Many of them wonder if our corporate and elected leaders have the answers to our problems.
I was flipping out.
America is struggling to shake off the recession. Public distrust of wealthy CEOs remains high. The mayor will trade in his key to the city and fine dining for a wrench and roadkill. This experience will take a physical toll on a fake reality show. And along the way, he'll face real danger. But some bosses are willing to take extreme action by working on the front lines of public service.
You know anything about a horse?
Not very much.
You have a brain?
Yes.
Can you spell horse?
The boss will trade in his luxury sedan and country club membership for a housekeeper's cart and a plunger.
And just get the real deal.
The boss will trade in his tailored suits and pristine home for a blowtorch and raw sewage. Unexpectedly personal.
You taught me how to be a better person.
Each week, we follow the boss of a major corporation.
Welcome to my world.
It's a very stressful business in the money department.
That's a problem to hear people say that.
He's the mayor in disguise in their own company. This billion-dollar e-commerce giant manages websites and fulfills orders for huge retailers. The boss will trade in his private jet and boat for a headset and a power drill. Undercover boss's dirtiest mission yet. The boss is going to trade in his executive office and expense account for a hard hat and a bagged lunch when lives are on the line. The boss will trade in his executive office and personal putting greens for a mop and a pot of Joe.
What's going on here?
He just goofed.
The boss is going to trade in his executive office and fast cars for a hairnet and an apron.
You know when we get paid?
I did it again.
I destroyed 4,800 buns.
Point it out.
Couple misses coming.
It's intimidating when you're not sure what you're supposed to be doing.
The boss will trade in his executive office and expense account for a pair of jeans and a feed bucket. How will his coworkers react when they find out he's really the boss? Will he be able to handle being waist deep in his own business?
Let me do my job, okay? Let me take care of it.
He's the only person that's ever fired me in my whole career.
For a bulldozer and rubber gloves. The boss will trade in his luxury SUV and model train set for a sewing machine and industrial washer.
Didn't think I'd be having emotional issues riding on the back of a garbage truck.
The boss will trade in his executive office and expense account for a beard, some boots, and a quacker. And one of them has something to prove.
Are you going to get that done for me?
A failed business owner. The boss of America's largest trash company, Waste Management. A $13 billion business with 45,000 employees and 20 million customers. The president and CEO of Hooters, a $1 billion-a-year business with nearly 500 restaurants in 27 different countries. The sun never sets on Hooters. America's oldest fast food company, White Castle, with its own restaurants, bakeries, and food preparation plants, it sells more than 550 million burgers each year.
This week, the CEO of America's largest family-owned theme park company poses as a new recruit. The president and COO of North America's largest plumbing and drain cleaning company, 1-800-Flowers, the world's largest florist and gift shop. President and CEO of Choice Hotels, one of America's largest hotel chains. The president and CEO of DirecTV, America's largest satellite television service. The president and CEO of the UniFirst Corporation, one of North America's largest producers of workwear and uniforms. Tonight, for the first time, we go undercover with an elected official, the president and CEO of Synagro, the president and CEO of Checkers and Rallies, the world's largest double drive-through chain, the CTO of Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen, the world's second largest fried chicken restaurant chain, the CEO of Mood Media, the world's largest in-store media provider, poses as a failed nightclub owner. ADT, America's largest provider of home security, sends their chief marketing officer undercover. He's really the boss. 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 And when she's faced with the truth, find out next on Undercover Boss.
We're meeting up with some matches made in Flavor Town Heaven.
You're gonna get me run out of town, man.
In Fort Greene, Brooklyn.
Not much change in temperature. A slight atmospheric disturbance of undetermined origin is reported over Nova Scotia, causing a low-pressure area to move down rather rapidly over the northeastern states, bringing a forecast of rain accompanied by winds of light gale force. Maximum temperature 66, minimum 48. This weather report comes to you from the Government Weather Bureau. We take you now to the Meridian Room in the Hotel Park Plaza in downtown New York, where you will be entertained by the music of Raymond Raquello and his orchestra. Ladies and gentlemen, from the Meridian Room in the Park Plaza Hotel in New York City, we bring you the music of Raymond Raquello and his orchestra. With a touch of the Spanish, Raymond Raquello leads off with La Compensita.
And this is a million-dollar room. We're getting an exclusive look inside the most expensive kitchens and baths around the world. From a kitchen in Australia that has the ultimate feature in luxury.
Some people think it's crystals, but no, it's diamonds.
To an indoor spa in Dallas, which highlights a shower worth over $200,000.
I built this space if I was Bill Gates, I just didn't care about cash.
Then an extraordinary space to have an unforgettable meal.
This is the tallest indoor waterfall in New York City home.
And a Spanish mansion with a bathroom that rivals Fort Knox.
Gold is my color.
It's the ultimate inside the most luxurious kitchens and baths.
My current bathroom is twice the size of this one.
You can have some really good parties out here.
This is a small kitchen.
I'm Pam.
And I'm Doug.
And we're looking for our first place. Right now, we live in a rental that has absolutely everything that we want.
First-time homebuyers, spoiled by their luxurious Chicago rental, struggle to find a condo that measures up.
There's no automatic ice maker. That's a deal breaker, actually.
Pam wants no part of her realtor's reality check.
We gotta be realistic, honestly.
That's not gonna happen.
And when she finally thinks she's found their first place.
You know what, Lillian, we hit the jackpot.
Will Doug be ready to bid sight unseen?
Do you trust me?
Then their entire search hinges on one moment's hesitation that could cost them their first place.
I almost want to say that maybe we would.
Ha ha ha!
Now I am.
But it's a very natural thing to, on both sides. Time is obviously real in the sense that we use it all the time. You can't even make a sentence without invoking some notion of time, right? Past, present, future. In fact, dictionary researchers have shown that the word time is the most used noun in the English language. So certainly something about time is real. What physicists who say time might not be real really mean is that it might not be fundamental. That is to say that when we dig down into the laws of physics, we realize that time is not one of the crucial objects, crucial concepts that we require to make sense of reality. Now, even that is actually completely unclear at this moment. The best theories we have of reality right now do include the notion of time in them. It is not an illusion. It is not emergent. It is not a fake. It is really there. It is one of the fundamental things that we know. So the question is, once we finally understand everything, we have a better theory of everything in which time disappears. And opinions differ. My personal belief is that time is actually going to survive. That once we understand the best possible theory of nature, time will be a big part of it.
Okay, well, if we look at time, there may be three components. The sense of a now, which makes the past really past and the future really hasn't happened yet. And now, whatever that means, is the only reality. Second is maybe a flow of time that we sense there's movement. And third is a direction, that it's going forward as far as our perceptions are concerned. And so in each of the three of those, how does the concept of whether time is fundamental or not survive?
One of the things that is really confusing about time is that we use the same word to mean different things.
Okay.
And in fact, this was one of Einstein's great breakthroughs when he realized in special relativity that time as used to denote moments in the history of the universe is completely different from time as used to measure duration for my personal self. So the time that I measure as I travel with my watch throughout the universe is not the same as the time we used to say the Big Bang happened 13.7 billion years ago. They're related to each other in an obvious way. And in fact, he figured out exactly how they are related to each other. If Isaac Newton had been correct, then they simply would have been the same.
Same thing.
Yeah. Einstein showed that there are two different things. The time you experience, the time we use to slice the universe.
I'm scared. I'm scared.
Ladies and gentlemen, a very good evening to you. And thank you, Amanda, for those kind words of introduction. I'm going to start with an apology and a warning. I'm suffering from a heavy cold, and it's possible that the lecture will be interrupted by paroxysms of
pain. I'm scared.
However, we have a plan. Amanda has a kind
I'm scared.
To return to the stage.
I'm scared. I'm scared. I'm scared. I'm scared. I'm scared.
How shall I recover? Begin. And so that type of time travel set the stage for many, many stories and movies that have come thereafter. This is just a sample of a few that have been around recently. So time travel is this enduring science fiction theme. But we physicists, of course, are more concerned with the facts. And the question is, if time travel were possible, how would you do it? What would a time machine actually be like? Now, I think the Hollywood movie in the 1950s, which was based on H.G. Wells' book, The Time Machine, really has set the trend, as this cartoon makes clear. So this is the archetypal time machine, and in the remake, of H.G. Wells' Time Machine, which was about 5-6 years ago. They had a similar looking sort of Victorian brass and glass contraption, and so the idea of a machine that you sit in and it's full of sort of gleaming instruments lives on even in modern science fiction. And incidentally, the producer of that film was H.G.'s great-grandson. But would it really look like that, or would it be more like the DeLorean car in Back to the Future? Or would it be like the famous police box in Doctor Who? Now, when I talk about time travel in the United States, I always take a few moments to explain what is a police box.
Deep in the heart of the Ohio countryside, miles from the nearest shopping mall, is the largest Amish settlement in the U.S. It's a highly secretive, God-fearing community known the world over for their handcrafted masterpieces and attention to detail. But they shun the modern world and live a simple life, filled with hard work and worship.
I'm scared, and 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 I'm scared.
Sim screen.
Sim screen.
Toyota Hiyake.
Generation Now.
Ah.
child security gave me nightmares. I would rather watch a group of babies be taken away from their mother and be put into a dark hole with no means of escaping except for killing each other.
Well, how are the babies going to kill each other?
That's some sick ass.
This came off my Facebook. They could have put idiots smushing poo, and it would have been better than small town security.
Yeah, well, them.
If I have to hear that decrepit old bag one more time, I'm going to throw up.
Why would people watch the show that don't like it? When you don't like somebody, you keep away from it.
That's the kind of thing that eats
I can't, I cannot put up with stupidity like that.
This show is disgustingly pitiful crap.
I sure hope this show gets canceled.
And in my movie, Supersize Me, I explored the issue of obesity by eating nothing but McDonald's for 30 days straight. Over the course of my experiment, I went through a physical, mental, and emotional transformation that was like living somebody else's life. But it got me thinking, what if you could live someone else's life for just 30 days? After all, America's a big country with lots of different people. Is it possible we could all learn something from each other? I mean, would you feel comfortable as a Christian walking in a Muslim shoes for 30 days? What if you were a straight man living in a gay man's world? Would it change who you are? Duck, 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 duck. Say you drank like a college student for a month. Would you flunk out of life? Yeah! In this series, we'll find out. And I'm going to kick it off with an issue many Americans deal with every day. Minimum wage.
Minimum wage!
Yeah. Millions of Americans work full-time jobs and still live below the poverty line. How do they survive? Could I do it? Well, we'll find out as I try to live on minimum wage for the next 30 days.
Hey buddy, I'm still waiting.
Yeah, you want fries with that?
Super intelligent race would be able to create this meringue pie quite easily. It's not so complicated. Or maybe we'll be able to do it in the future. Is this something we should take seriously?
Well, it's certainly a serious speculation in the sense that I think we are at least ready to address the question of whether or not the laws of physics as we know them allow for the possibility for some super advanced civilization to create a new universe in the laboratory. By laboratory, I mean that kind of in a figurative sense, but I mean by processes created by that civilization. Before ideas like inflation, I think it clearly seemed impossible. It seemed that we just needed a huge amount of matter to create a universe, so we needed a universe to create a universe, and that was that. Inflation has this miraculous property of being able to create matter as the inflation takes place. So it offers at least the possibility that you can imagine in this experiment in this hypothetical laboratory of some super civilization and literally create a new universe.
Because all you need is 1 gram, so to speak.
That's
one
right.
gram
all
of
you
matter
need is one
and a little special
gram.
Stuff, a little special
that's
sauce.
Right. A little special sauce.
A little special sauce and some ripenings, and suddenly you can.
Suddenly, poof, a new universe might be created. We still don't know for sure if this is possible, to be honest. The end of our speculation is that we couldn't tell. Although it looked plausible, like maybe the answer is yes. The problem that stopped us from drawing any definite conclusions is that we discovered that classically, it is not possible. There are theorems based on general relativity which say that if you start to create the conditions to create a new universe, you put enough matter together so that you just collapse into a black hole, and you don't produce a new universe classically. If one thinks that one can devote quantum mechanics to undergo a tunneling process that could take you from one state to a slightly different state by a quantum jump that would not be possible classically, then it looks like you could produce a universe in a laboratory. And the problem with understanding that is that one really needs a quantum theory of gravity, because the space itself is changing its form. So the geometry of space is changing in this tunneling process. So to understand it fully, one needs a quantum theory of gravity, which we don't really have. String theory is perhaps a quantum theory of gravity, but not yet well enough developed to answer these questions. So in the end, our answer was somewhat undetermined. It was curious. We could describe in much more detail what would happen if you could do it than knowing the ultimate answer of whether or not it can be done.
What are some of these things?
Okay, so one thing you might worry about is if you did create a new universe, would it blow up in your face and destroy our universe? The answer to that is no. It's a safe experiment, if general relativity is correct. The new universe would not move out into our universe, but rather it would develop a kind of a neck and then produce a new space at the end of the neck. And then, in fact, it would, in a very short length of time, a fraction of a second, pinch off at that neck and become completely separated from our universe.
And we'd have no way of communicating.
We'd have no way of communicating after that, that's correct. We'd be able to tell in principle that it was produced, only for a little instant in its early stages, and then it would become completely separated with no way for us to communicate with it.
So it's like a bird, a mother bird having a little baby bird and throwing it out of the nest and never seeing it again.
Absolutely, yes. Exactly like that.
Well, these are very speculative, in some cases, science fiction kinds of ideas, but they are really important probes in terms of really understanding the real physics. So it's, I think, a serious endeavor as well as something that's very entertaining.
Yeah, that's right. We think of it as a serious endeavor. It's an attempt to probe what the limits are of what is allowed by the laws of physics as we know them. So all of our work is phrased in the context of what we know about the laws of physics and extrapolating that to more bizarre situations.
So indeed, what would happen? You have your gram, and I mean, if you were there and you simulated what it would look like, and here we are, we're doing it, we're confident it's not going to suck us up into it, right? I hope you're right. I'm trusting you now. I'm trusting you. I don't know if I do this, but I trust you. You're a good friend, but hey, wait. All right, so now what happens? We do it, and what do we see? Do we see something before it goes away? Where
does it go? Right. It goes into forming, as I said, a neck which connects onto a larger space-time, which then undergoes inflation at the end of the neck, and then this neck pinches off so that we are left with only the pinched.
Ready for your life to be changed?
Let's go, buddy.
Look like a black hole. As we were seeing it,
in the great American wild, there's cold, hard cash just waiting to be found. But only a select few know exactly where to look and exactly how to get it.
In the button-down shirt? Yeah, you. What would you think on fleek means?
I have no idea.
Just take... What does that mean? Figure it out. On fleek. If you use it in a sentence.
I'm going on fleek.
That's good. All right. All right, let's just see what it means. The quality of being perfect or on point. So, well, you were heading that way. That's what you're saying. Like today, your outfit is on fleek. Right. All right. Or if your grammar was on fleek, you wouldn't use it. You wouldn't even use the word. Let's see the next one. Netflix and chill. Wow. A lot of people know what that means, which is interesting to me. I'm going back to the gentleman. What do you think it means?
You want another sentence?
Yeah. Use it in a sentence.
I'm going on Netflix and chill.
You know what Netflix is, right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Okay, and you know what chill means?
Yeah, but both in the same sentence, I'm not sure.
Okay. What it means, what's your name?
Joel.
Joel, what it means is sex.
Digging into Grandpa's playbook.
And a lot of you knew what that was. Joel, did you have a different slang for sex? What did you use?
Oh, I do.
Yeah? What was the slang you used?
I'm French, actually. So. Sex.
Just. Oh, that's how the French say it, you guys.
This is starting to get a little surreal. This.
I am surprised at how many of you knew what that meant. All right, let's see the next one. Bay. All right, does people know what that is? Most of you know what bay is.
What is that?
Some people do not know. I'll stick with Joel because you're right there. You're French. What does it mean?
Bay in French? Like, berry?
No, it's actually really ridiculous. It means baby or sweetie. It's like, because if you don't want to take the time to say baby, it actually saves you a lot of time, because we're very busy here, so we don't have time to say baby. We just shorten it, or you can shorten it more and just say b.
Turning me into the noodle king.
Pronounced thought, but thought. Wow, a lot of you know what that is. You know what that is? All right, use it in a sentence.
Is a coward. Now in English, we have a lot of slang words for a coward person. So this lesson is for the youngsters, especially who have friends who are very coward. So if you do have a friend who is coward, well, these are the words for you. So let's learn. The first one is pansy. Pansy, have you heard that? Well, pansy, you would actually call a guy pansy, but the literal meaning of pansy is formerly a woman. Now, it is a known fact that women are, weak and or weak-hearted, and they're not very strong, and they get scared very easily. I'm sorry, I don't believe that. I'm a woman myself. I think we are very strong. Look, I went bungee jumping, right? So we are strong, but then, you know, it is a belief that women are pretty weak. So someone whom you call pansy, especially guys, it means that guy is so weak and is so feminine, okay? So if you have a guy friend who is a coward, then you can use the word pansy. Another one is sissy. Well, sissy, the word is derived from the word sister. Okay, actually, the short form of sister, that's sis. And then, of course, the word was formed sissy. Now, sissy is, again, someone who is very weak, okay, and not very strong-hearted. So that person, you can call him sissy. You're such a sissy. Okay, so that's how you can use it. The next one, chicken. Now, we human beings, we love to compare. And very often, we do compare people with animals. So, like the bird chicken, do you think chicken is very brave? Oh no, go try catch a chicken. It's so difficult because chicken are very fearful. So, you know, the word chicken is perfect for a person who is such a coward. Now, there's another term called chicken shit. Well, not a great word to use. It can be pretty offending as well. So use it with your close friends only, okay? Don't use it for any random person because I'm sure that person will not like you calling him or her chicken shit. You are such a chicken shit. Don't do that. So, but yes, there is another slang term for people who are very scared or who get scared very easily. They are absolutely chicken shit or chicken. Okay? Well, actually, yes. I mean, if you think a chicken is not very brave like a eagle or like a hawk, right? So it's okay to compare people with chicken. The next one, cry baby. You're such a cry baby. You know, I have this friend of mine. We've been friends for a very, very long time now. But she keeps on whining all the time. You ask her something, okay, come on, let's do this or let's do that. Let's go parasailing, let's go boating. And all the time she does is whine. Well, I'm so done with that. And I, you know, we always keep telling her, you are such a crybaby. So crybaby is, again, someone who keeps whining. Whining for everything, and of course, is always very scared or very skeptical about doing something or the other. Okay, so that person is such a crybaby. Next one, mama's boy. We women love this term. Because every man that we come across, we think that man is way too dependent on their mother. So, yes, I do have friends who are absolutely mama's boy. They need their mothers to protect them, or they're way too attached to their mothers. So they won't do anything without their mothers. Well, that's just an exaggeration. So someone who is, you know, way too attached to their mothers and, you know, are very scared to do anything, they are absolutely mama's boy. Do you have a friend, a guy friend, who is an absolute mama's boy? Well, let me know who is it, okay? So someone who need their mothers everywhere, okay? Or someone who's just way too scared to do something, okay? Next one, cream puff. Have you eaten cream puff before? It's nice. It's absolutely delicious. Well, cream puff is like a pastry with some whipped cream or with some custard. It's nice. All girls love it. So this term is used for men who are extremely feminine, okay, or effeminate. So someone who is extremely effeminate, again, someone who's very girly, feminine, well, cream puff is the right word to use. So, yes, use it if you have friends who get scared easily, okay, who are very fearful, and who denote effeminism, okay? The next one, pigeon-hearted. Well, pigeon-hearted is just like a chicken or chicken shit. Pigeon-hearted is, again, have you observed a pigeon? Well, the moment you try to go close to a pigeon, the pigeon flies away. Or the moment you try to hush a pigeon, the pigeon is so scared and the pigeon flies away, right? So pigeon-hearted is, again, compared to a person who is very scared of things, okay? even the slightest of noise in dark would totally scare that person. So this means that person is pigeon-hearted. It can be used for girls.
Please wait to enter this hotel and it's safe to do so.
Running down 7th Avenue with a piece of dark brown meat in his jaws and a pack of starving mongrels at his heels. Made a wide circle around me as though he feared I might prove a fresh competitor. Walked up Broadway in the direction of that strange powder, that silent shop windows, displaying their mute wares to empty sidewalks. Past the Capitol Theater, silent, dark. Past a shooting gallery where a row of empty guns faced an arrested line of wooden ducks. Near Columbus Circle, I noticed models of 1939 motor cars in the showrooms facing empty streets. Over the top of the General Motors building, I watched a flock of black birds circling in the sky. Hurried on. Suddenly, I caught sight of the hood of a Martian machine standing somewhere in Central Park, gleaming in the late afternoon sun. Insane idea. I rushed recklessly across Columbus Circle and into the park. I climbed a small hill above the pond at 60th Street. From there, I could see standing in a silent row along the mall 19 of those great metal titans, their cowls empty, their steel arms hanging listlessly by their sides. I looked in vain for the monsters that inhabit those machines. Suddenly, my eyes were attracted to the immense flock of black birds that hovered directly below me. They circled the ground.
My mouth is having just some complete meltdown. My mouth is having just some complete meltdown.
Play the Martians with the hungry birds pecking and tearing brown shreds of flesh from their dead bodies. Later, when their bodies were examined in laboratories, it was found that they were killed by the putrefactive and diseased bacteria against which their systems were unprepared.
Just some complete meltdown. My mouth is
plain, after all, man's defenses had failed. By the humblest thing that God, His wisdom, has put upon this earth. Before the cylinder fell, there was a general persuasion that through all the deep space, no life existed beyond the petty surface of our minute sphere. Now we see further. Dim and wonderful is the vision I've conjured up in my mind of life spreading slowly from this little seedbed of the solar system throughout the inanimate vastnesses of sidereal space, but a remote dream, maybe. Maybe that the destruction of the Martians is only a reprieve to them and not to us. The future ordained, perhaps. Ah, strange it now seems to sit in my peaceful study at Princeton, writing down this last chapter of the record, begun at a deserted farm in Grover's Mill. Strange to see from my window the university spires dim and blue through an April haze. Strange to watch children playing in the streets. Strange to see young people strolling on the green where the new spring grass heals the last black scars of a bruised earth. Strange to watch the sightseers enter the museum where the dissembled parts of a Martian machine are kept on public view. Strange when I recall the time when I first saw it. Bright and clean-cut, hard and silent under the dawn of that last great day.
It's like this great ball of amazingness. 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 It's like this great ball of
And this is a million-dollar room. We're getting an exclusive look inside the most expensive.
It's like this great ball of amazingness. 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 It's like this great ball of
Well, if it isn't that time again. Thank you for listening to the Union of Time Thieves here on KBOO Portland. This is Becky, and I wanted to thank everyone for listening, especially our opinionated friend who somehow is still listening to the radio. Good for you. We're so stoked. I wanted to let everyone know, Union of Time Thieves is expanding. We will be producing a podcast for KBOO and video art and all that good stuff. So keep an eye out on our Facebook page, The Union of Time Thieves. Like it, love it, and learn. Learn about all the things. We're also going to have a show on KFFP starting when they go on the air. April 1st, it's no joke. That show is called Fence Post Modern and it will be on from 10 a.m. on Sundays to noon. So keep an eye out on the Facebook page. Stay tuned to KBOO. You're about to encounter the Sudden Radio Project. Stay tuned.
Clock is getting ready to leave the station. Get aboard. This is the Sudden Radio Project. For a long time, a contributor, Connor Kearns, has rolled up his sleeves and given his best. He's a producer, writer, and director, and this new episode is featuring the work of Connor Kearns. The entire episode will be the work of Connor Kearns. Three pieces: Trouble, Fire Sale, and Tom Jones in Seattle. That's right, it's KBOO. Keep your ears open.